Hey, citizens of the interweb, you have landed on A Shot and a Beer, a weekly interview podcast featuring chefs, brewers, troublemakers, and heartbreakers. Every week, we're talking food and booze with people who do it for a living. So grab a beer, pour yourself a shot, and come along for the ride. Hey everyone, it's Shot and a Beer. We are back again with a very special episode today. Our guest today is one of the people that I've known longest since I moved back to San Diego. She's a very, very good friend of mine. And we have a lot to talk about. Our guest today is Gabby Lutz. How are you, sweetie?
I am lovely. How are you?
Good. And with me, as always, God, that's such a Wayne's World reference. And with him, as always, is Garth.
Oh, Captain, my Captain.
How you been, Maddie?
Top notch. Can't complain.
I like the new facial decoration.
I don't know what you're referring to.
I was going to ask about the makeup, but
yeah. Either you're playing center field for the Padres on a day game, or that's quite a shiner you have.
I have a black eye, but the first two rules are I'm not allowed to talk about it, so.
I got it. Fight Club, got it.
Thank you.
I always wondered why you smell like soap when you come in.
Did you know that a human being can swallow 12 ounces of blood without vomiting? Now I do.
Should I go get the baking soda and the acid?
Right.
For later on in the episode. This one's going to get weird.
Chemical burns for everyone.
Yum.
So, Gab, you and I met at the Handlery. Mm-hmm. And you probably started working there 6 months after I started working there.
Oh, I didn't even realize it was that.
Yeah.
Soon.
Yeah, I hadn't been there all that long. But as we always do on this show, why don't we talk a little bit. I know most of your history, but mm-hmm. everybody who is listening to this does not. I love you in spite of the fact that you're from Maryland and a Ravens fan. But why don't we talk a little bit about your history, where you got your start in F&B. Was your start in F&B in New York?
No, it was in Maryland.
In Maryland?
Yeah, I started right after high school in 95. Yeah. at this little just mom and pop restaurant, served a little bit, and then went on to the Hard Rock, who I worked for 10 years at numerous stores. So I worked in Baltimore, D.C., Philly.
Did you work at the Hard Rock in the Inner Harbor?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, oh, I worked there for 4 years, New York, and then downtown here. And I would make special appearances at La Jolla before they closed, too.
I had no idea that you worked for Hard Rock for so long.
Mm-hmm. I had my Rolex. I sold that thing.
How was it working for that?
It's a good company to work for, but I went through so many transitions with them. Like, when I first started in 97, like, managers were still able to pick all of the music. So I knew which manager was on because I'd be like, oh, it's just Rush. So that is Christine. You know, like, so it was fun. You got to program it.
It's just Rush.
Yeah.
Just Rush. Which would be fine for me.
Right. But when it's every song.
Though for an eight-hour shift, that's what? Four or five songs?
Right. Yeah, that's about all they had. Well, and the thing with Hard Rock.
What song is on? I don't know. 9 minutes, no lyrics? Huh.
There's a lot of guitar solo in this one. You always knew if Jiggy With It was coming on. If you started hearing that, you knew the YMCA was coming on after. So everyone goes and gets their headdresses. You're dancing on bars and all the rest of that. That was always. That was because the kitchen was
in
the weeds.
Is that still part of the culture?
Oh, yeah. I don't think they dance on things, but we used to do it when, like, we would just be going down in flames. We're like, all right, let's distract the guests. Put the YMCA on.
Oh, my God.
Uh-huh. Why not? Know. It works.
Well, and the reason that I'm surprised, and I realize that I've completely cut you off about your bio, but this is relevant. You have worked in a lot. Since I've known you, you've only worked independents.
Uh-huh.
And there's a lot of people who are really suited to the corporate, and there's a lot of people who are really suited to independence.
I'm suited to independence, mm-hmm. and I spent about 10 years in corporate figuring that the hell out.
Yeah. It took me... Okay, so after I parted ways with Hard Rock is when I went to the Oasis, which is just this little... That's where I met Kimberly.
Who has been on this show.
I've known a lot of these people on the shows.
It's because I only book my friends.
So meeting her, and that's when I worked for an actual chef. Like, so it was interesting to learn about food and not just serve the same menu for 10 years. And there's a little bit more freedom when you're not
Did the Hard Rock really not change their... I mean, they would probably change a couple things.
Yeah, but I bet you if I walk in there, there's still, you know, the pig sandwich on there. There's probably still spring rolls. You know, all great items, which is what, you know, people go there for.
Right.
And, like, even I had backpacked through Europe, and I couldn't wait to get to a Hard Rock because I knew what the food was.
Yeah, I can see that.
It was comfort food.
Yeah, there was also... ice in the soda. It was delicious. But after like working with a chef for the first time, I was like, oh, this is really fun and it's interesting. And I learned how to taste wine properly and, you know, just the ins and outs of it. And after that is when I went to the handler and met you.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's when she stopped working with
all downhill from there.
That's where my life ended. No, but still working with you, and like we would do the offsite things and just watching you cook, and it's exciting. And you know that I love to take pictures of food. I am that person,
mm-hmm.
and I'm good at it. You know, I'm so interested in that culture. And then being in San Diego, having the beer culture with it, you know, and doing beer dinners and pairings and tastings is amazing. And then after that, working with Rich Sweeney. At our gang, like for about 5 years with him.
Yep.
Yeah.
Rich is a show favorite.
Oh yeah.
He was one of our first guests.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a lofty height to hold.
Oh crap.
What, being our first guest?
Yep.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
That,
down
in history.
This is back when we didn't know what we were doing.
Right. Got it all
so
figured out
now.
So
we do know what we're doing.
It's a legacy
now.
Oh
yeah, it's dialed in. We are ready for Disney.
Oh, I'll be there next week. Yeah, no, and then working for Rich, and then, you know, really, like, even getting into being part of the creative process of talking about food, you know, and then you coming in and, like, other people coming in. You know, that was 5 years of it. So I had gotten out of the corporate world, which was nice because of that freedom. Worked for another small company. Which we'll talk about all that later, about how I closed down Fifth Avenue.
Yes.
Like, I'm a success that way. But now, going back into the corporate life, it's so different. Like, it's not all the rules and structure. It's just some of it doesn't make any sense. And I understand that not everyone is as smart as, not even just me, just a regular person, but... Like it's
It has to be geared for the lowest common denominator.
Correct.
Yeah. And still function.
Right. You know, and it's fun, and you know, it gets monotonous. You know, it's an everyday thing. You know, this is the same thing every day. And so every day I go into work, I'm like, okay, here's the machine again. You know, but which is why I'm going back in to the less corporate side, and you know, spilling mimosas on people for brunch.
The thing that I think benefited both you and I, when you get out of the corporate nightmare, for lack of a better term, you end up still bringing a lot of things with you from that, because there's certain things that corporate restaurants and corporations do exceedingly well.
Yeah, well, that's the reason why they have numerous stores and you know
stuff like and it's all the stuff that sucks.
Like cleaning procedures,
inventory control, time management, stuff like that, cleaning lists, shit like that. It's stuff that they have had dialed in for decades.
They brought outside companies to
Out. And they really do it right. And a lot of those things are stuff that you can apply to the mom and pop independent that maybe isn't thinking about that.
Correct. Oh.
And if I can avoid it, and I say that with, you know, knock wood, if I can avoid it, I'm going to try to not go back to the corporate world.
Uh-huh.
Trouble is... You make a lot of fucking money.
Yeah.
In the corporate world.
They tend to stay open a little longer than
it's certainly places you work.
What are you talking about, Carl? You're going to be here for the rest of your life at the Madhouse.
It's really
ever and
it's
ever.
It's really looking that way.
We're going to stuff you and put you in the back next to the suit of armor.
I don't know how that. I don't know where my career took such a weird turn and what the fuck I was doing when it did that.
It's when you started standing on that stage.
Yeah. I think that's really what it is. It's the microphone. It's the curse of the microphone. But the corporate world, they teach you a lot of structure. Mm-hmm. I just didn't work well within 70% of the shit that you're supposed to be doing. I couldn't be a good little drone.
Yeah. I was glad at the years that I spent in the corporate world when I was younger, in my early 20s, because that taught me how to be a nice structured server, bartender, manager, you know, but going into the independent side, like, you still have that structure, but there's that little lean, you know, the meniscus is a little higher.
Well, what I like is they do, and going back to Maddie's point, they teach us steps of service, and that's really getting lost. They teach you the 5 and 10 rule. They teach you just basic hospitality shit, for lack of a better term. And it's something that's really, we have discussed guests and how horrid they have become, and service staff and how lax they've become.
Correct.
We even did a quick shot about how casual everything seems to be anymore. Mm-hmm. And it's you're missing the basics. And places like Hilton, Ritz-Carlton for sure. I worked for Starwood for a lot of times. That stuff still exists.
Yeah.
You know, you say hello to somebody if you're within five feet. You smile at them if you're within 10 feet.
Mm-hmm.
Someone wants to know where the restroom is, you walk them to the restroom. That's the basics for people who came up the way we did.
Yeah.
And it's not something that people do anymore.
Yeah, our work ethic is definitely a lot different. Mm-hmm. I mean, and everyone always says it's always the millennials and all the rest. And I was like, and I get that, but that's partially our fault, you know, because we didn't teach them right either.
Oh, absolutely not.
I didn't teach anybody shit. Well, I'm just going to point that out. I'm not claiming any responsibility for any of those fuckers.
That's why, like, when I train people, I train them exactly how I serve.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I let them go, and then I pull them aside, constructive criticism, as opposed to berating them at a table, which I see so many times, which makes people like, okay, I'm so standoffish, you know, and it really is. It's they don't pay attention as much anymore. Once they get through this training, they're like, all right, now I can do what I want, right?
Yep.
You know?
Well, and, you know, and it's part of the thing that I didn't like about corporate is it can feel very robotic too. Sheraton for a long time had the service promise, and it was scripted, and it was laid out on a grid. Basically, if you have this complaint and this is your first call and you're this level of angry, you meet them and you go, okay, here's free breakfast. And if that doesn't work, you go down the flow chart and go, here's a free night stay. And it was designed to really help, but
was it successful?
No, it was a morbid failure. It was because people, instead of saying, "Hey, you know, it's here at Sheraton, we have a service promise. If you're not happy, we're not happy."
Right.
You hear the sincerity?
Right.
It got on the phone. It was, "At Sheraton, we have a service promise. If you're not happy, we're not happy. Please press 1 if you're not happy." It was very
robotic,
very scripted, and people were losing the ability to think on their feet. And the guests got it dialed in to where they go, no, that's not good enough.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go to door number 2.
Yep. Right.
Yep.
And people, they did away with it. It was one of those things that seemed like a good idea when they started it, and it just got abused on both sides.
Yeah. And that's true. It's so on both sides. You know, we become robots, and the guests, they learn.
Yep.
you know, they know what they can get for free. They know what, you know, they heard Sally Mae, you know, she's like, oh, this is what happened when I was at the Sheridan or, you know, at the Melting Pot or wherever.
Exactly.
And go
exactly.
in there and do the same thing.
Interesting. It's so true. There was a guy, when I worked in Falls Church, Virginia, there was a guy that I knew the general manager of the Mortons there. And he had a guest that came in every week. And the guy would bring in clients and all that. But every week, there was something wrong with something that happened. And at Morton's, I guess their old policy used to be if somebody complains, they eat free.
Mm-hmm.
And oh, this wow, guy that's a horrible policy. That is terrible.
But or it was something along those lines. Either that or you get a voucher to come back.
Come back, yep.
Come back the next time.
Right.
Well, this guy had a never-ending, he probably paid once, mm-hmm. and he's been eating there for free since then.
It's like getting comedy club tickets.
Yeah.
You pay for the first round, we'll give you free for the rest.
Yeah, exactly. And it's that kind of, it just gets abused mm-hmm. on both sides.
Yeah, and I've seen managers that, like, just, they don't know how to take the steps. You know, they mm-hmm. go straight to, here, let me take this off your check. Let me give you this for free, da-da-da-da. And it could be nothing to do with the service or anything. And then it trickles down to the server, and they don't get their proper due because of something that happened,
right?
You know, that was out of their control. Mm-hmm. You know, it's crazy, and it's where people take advantage all the time.
Yeah.
But well, then when you get those good guests, you want, like, you really want to embrace them. You're just like, I actually have an esthetician, and she gave me and my roommate a gift because she was like, you guys are so nice. You're kind. You don't try to sell me anything. And I was like, wait, what? She's like, I have so many entrepreneurs that come in here, and they try to sell me stuff. I was like, while you're waxing their eyebrows or whatever? She's like, yeah. So literally, she gave us both, like, a couple of happy birthdays from Alpine, a candle, and some See's candy. Like, who does that?
Right.
You know, who rewards good behavior anymore?
Yeah, and that's really, I've had experience with a lot of companies that had, you know, rewards programs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you're a good customer, continue to come back. I've seen a lot of that drop off. Mm-hmm.
Isn't that corporate America's fault? Because that whole we'll give you rewards thing is actually them just keeping tabs on your spending habits.
It is. It absolutely is. But I've seen we've become more of a culture of rewarding the complainer mm-hmm. rather than trying mm-hmm. to take care of the people who actually like us.
Look at Yelp.
Yeah.
I mean, that in itself, that we...
Yelp,
like,
comes up on this show quite
a bit.
and everybody hates it.
Yeah, but still everybody uses it. Like, yeah. I have a friend that, how he picks a place to go, he looks at the picture. He doesn't look at the reviews, which is nice. Mm. I'm happy about that. Because people normally just read the first couple of reviews, and they're like, it's either yay or nay. You know?
Right.
When you can have that one person that had a really terrible day, and there was one fruit fly in San Diego, which we know the fruit fly problem in San Diego. It's mm-hmm. awful. We live in the best climate ever. You know, so
for fruit flies.
Yeah, for fruit flies. And you just get this 3-page long Yelp, and now your stars have gone down and everything, you know. But your manager sends them a letter with a gift certificate because of this bad thing that they thought happened. You know, they weren't even in the store when this happened.
Right.
They didn't even have to eat in the store, actually, to write the Yelp review.
And, you know, I think that's another thing that was started out as a reasonable idea.
Correct.
And just turned, it devolved mm-hmm. into something that's just awful.
Yeah, but we still have to watch it.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So, Gabby, going back to your background, you've moved around a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Where are you, and you're originally from Baltimore?
I grew up in Southern Maryland.
Southern Maryland.
But I went to school right outside of Baltimore at Towson. So I was there for about 6 years, then moved to New York City, and then I've been out here for 11 years.
And met Rich.
I met Rich in New York. We used to bartend together at the Hard Rock. Yes. Yeah. This is my funny story about Rich, and he's going to love this.
There's a lot funny about Rich.
It's true. Have you seen his tiny pink shorts? No, he used to, at the end of our shifts, like, because we'd have some crazy nights at the Hard Rock in New York, and this is before it moved to Times Square. And at the end of the night, because he's so much taller than me, because I'm only 5'4", and he's 6...
He's at least 6'3".
Yeah. I would just lean back on him, and he would just hold my boobs up. Literally.
All right.
That's my one fun Rich story.
No.
Oh, wait.
We could probably spend an hour
so
on your
true.
Fun Rich stories.
So not true. Sorry, Rich.
You talked about working on Fifth Avenue,
mm-hmm.
and you and I worked there together when I took over. I actually just I considered it a babysitting gig.
I would understand that.
We worked together at our gang for 4 or 5 months
mm-hmm.
While Rich was opening Florent.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved the idea of our gang. I loved the idea of comfort food with a twist.
Yeah.
And there was nothing pretentious about it. It was a great experience working there.
Mm-hmm.
I loved working brunch with you and the Scream Queens.
Yes.
being the only heterosexual male in a very, very gay waiter corps in the kitchen. I heard
how many Disney songs.
I heard conversations that I really. It's one of those things. It's like, boy, you can't unhear that, can mm-hmm. you? Holy shit! But it was a great vibe.
Oh yeah.
And I was really sad when our gang closed.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot, and we're almost at the 1 year mark. So May 10th, because he chose to close it on my birthday. First of all.
Oh. Oof, what a jerk. What a drunk fucking night that was. Holy cow.
Oh.
The going away party.
And your wife's 50th.
And my wife's 50th uh-huh. birthday party. Oh, my God.
And Hannes and Sarah were celebrating something, too, I think. That or just Fireball. I don't know.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. But the I think as much as anything, when Rich closed that, I sent him a message and said, hey, you know what? It's... You had a 5-year run,
which is amazing.
Which is great for the nature of this business. Mm-hmm. I think everybody who listens to this podcast is pretty much a food and beverage kind of person. Mm-hmm. But to the layperson, I don't think they realize how transient the business actually is. I mean, look at the people in town who have opened and shuttered restaurants.
Tons.
I mean, there are the Gas Lamp is notorious mm-hmm. for things being open for, it's almost like it's a trial period. If you sign a lease down here, hey, have a great 6-month run
yeah.
and then go find where you're going to actually have your restaurant.
Yeah, correct.
And it's, you see Top Chef people
mm-hmm.
opening and closing restaurants.
Yep.
Yeah,
it doesn't have
Bracero,
to be.
Bracero,
oh, yeah.
Just saw the article today that their chef de cuisine is moving on. It's just, it's just a weird mix, and it's something that a lot of people probably just aren't prepared for.
No. Well, the Fregoso brothers, the ones that owned Local Habit, opened 3 different restaurants last year.
Did
so
they really?
It was the original Local Habit.
Yeah.
Then it was the Cali Creole Local Habit.
Right.
And now it's a taco place.
Oh, and same owners?
Yeah, same owners.
They just keep changing uh-huh. the nature of the rest
I think they just get new investors. Yeah.
and run through their money.
Exactly.
All right, so the entire restaurant business is a Ponzi scheme.
It really seems that way. But, you know, as I told Rich, I was like, it's hard to be sad about, as much as I miss our gang and mm-hmm. hanging there and all that, it's hard to be sad about a 5-year run.
Yeah.
When you basically started on a shoestring.
Mm-hmm.
It's not
and
like he
that's
had.
That's exactly what he did.
He didn't have a lot of money to open mm-hmm. that. He gathered a pool of money and got the place open. And you really had four really good years.
Yeah.
Half of a year that was kind of okay, and then the city.
And then the city
jerked us around with closing Fifth Avenue and basically destroyed any kind of lunch business that we had.
Yep.
And I was shepherding the ship during that period when we didn't know. We had an outdoor patio. They parked a porta-john right in front of the fucking patio.
Mm-hmm. It would either be that or a 15-foot pile of just dirt.
Dirt. They
would just dig holes, put the dirt there, and then refill the hole. That's what they did all damn day.
Yeah. Yeah, but we didn't know, and they couldn't give us a schedule, so we didn't know whether we could open or not.
Oh, wow.
It really hurt all the restaurants on Fifth Avenue.
Correct. You know, there's some that are still there, you know, but it really did. Like, that's what happened also. As soon as our gang closed, when I moved up the street.
The road work followed you up the street.
The road work followed.
Oh,
yeah. So, yeah, it's me.
It's you. It's you. But what's the taco place called now?
Do you know what neighborhood means in Spanish? Because it's whatever that is.
Oh, okay. neighborhood in Spanish.
Neighborhood in Spanish. Yeah. As far as I know.
Habito localo.
Yeah.
I just like the name neighborhood in Spanish. That sounds great in itself.
That's how I'd sell it.
Sounds like a Miles Davis album.
Mm. But and you're at the Melting Pot now.
Correct.
Are you managing the Melting Pot, or are you just serving?
I serve, bartend, and I supervise. So I've only been there since October, so obviously they like something about me.
Right.
I just come with a lot of experience, and I'm starting at Waypoint this evening.
Jeez, you and Rich back together again.
Yep, getting the gang back together.
What are you going to be doing there?
To start, brunch serving, and then there's talks of other things that I'm not quite sure yet about.
Well, they're looking to expand.
Mm-hmm.
Rich said as much on the show.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm giving away any corporate secrets.
Yeah.
When I learn so many things when I'm hammered that I don't know what's public and what's not. So really having a microphone in front of me is never a good idea.
And then a girl named Gabby. Oh, I'm going to tell you about everything.
Yeah.
Wait, another shot? Sweet.
You know, this place is going under. No, I didn't know that.
I just looked at your paperwork.
All right. Well, we are beyond the 20-minute mark, which means shot number one.
Woo.
So, Gab, it is wonderful seeing you. I haven't seen you in a long time.
It's been a minute.
Oh, God. Caskmates is so good.
J-Mo.
So, we were talking about corporate restaurants, and the other night when we went to see Purple Rain at the theater, and it was magical.
Was it?
Yes, it was. Don't roll your eyes at me again, Maddie.
No, I'm I will never judge you.
No,
for Prince.
We talked about it on another episode. The music was as spectacular as I remember hearing it in surround sound.
Yeah.
Was great, and it just further pointed out how fucking bad the acting was in that. Oh, the acting in that movie is absolutely terrible.
I kind of recall that. I have not seen it in a few years.
But that night before we went into the movie, talking about corporate restaurants, we went into the most recently opened corporate restaurant in that movie theater. And I will not go ahead and name it, although it rhymes with card mouse. And I went in there, and I don't have a problem with, like, corporate hotels.
Uh-huh.
I think corporate hotels are great. I have a huge problem with corporate restaurants. And I hate them. I hate trying to eat at Fridays and Applebee's, and I think that Olive Garden is a pox on the planet and should be eradicated. Because
the salads are good.
I was like, but the breadsticks.
Soup, salad, and breadsticks. But I hate those restaurants because they don't, culinarily, they don't go far enough. There are some very, very brilliant people putting together their menus, and it's all menu engineering, and we need to sell this many of these things. And there's a lot of really cool, neat ideas, but they never go far enough. Like if you advertise something as spicy, it's never spicy enough.
Yeah.
Or you add something that is unnecessary. For the first time in probably 10 years, I complained to a server and got something taken off my bill because it was so bad.
Wow.
And because I don't do that.
No.
What was it? I mean,
well, the thing about me is I can forgive less than great food. Not everybody is a great chef, cook, whatever. I can't forgive poor service.
Ah.
I get that.
Poor service is simply being nice. Simply being attentive. But this dish, they completely, totally buggered up deviled eggs.
Really?
I don't know how it's even possible to fucking do that. Because deviled eggs are one of my favorite things in the entire world.
Would they use like cinnamon instead of paprika? Or?
No, it came covered in this weird... It just like draped in this weird red sauce even know what the sauce was. And then it's like they took the yolks and they whipped the yolks, but they didn't season the yolks. So there was something, this weird red goop on top of my deviled eggs, which bothered me in the first place. And then I ate the egg and didn't pay any attention to the egg. They seemed to be more concerned about painting my eggs candy apple red with this fucking sauce.
Right.
You know, it was a 57 Chevy that had no engine. And the server came over and she's like, I love this. How's everything tasting? And I had already had a couple cocktails that day. Yeah, before the movie. I pre-gamed before the movie.
As you should.
And I was like, the queso dip is really, and the queso dip was really good. I said, this is awful. And she just like I punched her in the face. And I said, it's under-seasoned. I have no idea what this sauce is supposed to be. And she's like, well, let me get that out of your way, and scurried away because she could tell I was loading up for a Dennis Miller-style rant. <Man. laughs> You know,
like
where
manager,
I would have
manager,
her
manager.
There for the next 20 minutes telling her about her failures.
Let me tell you about your deviled egg dares.
Yeah.
Excellent.
I know you're the transportation vehicle for this thing that offended me so much. If you want to go grab the kitchen manager, we can wrap this all up. But they took it off the bill, and I was thinking about it, and Annette's like, you never complain. And I said,
they were
if you can't make a deviled egg, I mean, I will eat even less than stellar deviled eggs because I like them so much.
Right.
I like a lot of mustard and pickle juice in my deviled eggs.
Oh, yeah.
Because you're a pregnant woman.
Yeah.
Oh, my roommate puts pickles in them.
Oh.
They're so good. We did some bacon and blue cheese ones one time.
Oh, nice.
Oh, maize balls.
Nice.
Pesto ones. And this roommate actually works at this place that you're talking about.
Hi, Fosse.
And it's funny because I've seen their training program, you know, and I see what their steps of service are, and their managers are always on top of them, as a corporate restaurant always is, because you can't do anything wrong. Minute late, written up.
Well, that was the weird thing. I thought that as well, and I actually know that about them, that their manager was, in fact, a presence on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
You could tell, and I think there were two of them there that night. There generally probably is. Mm-hmm. They were always on the floor. They were checking with people at the bar. I had just sent something back, and the manager never came over to say anything to me, which I thought
was
really
weird. That's what I was
really
just about to ask you. So that just tells me that the server didn't say anything, except for, or I rang this in wrong. That's probably what the server said.
Where they didn't want to
get a complaint on themselves, even though, again, the server did not make the food.
No, absolutely not.
But the server would still get the complaint as far as on the corporate level, like their record?
Yes, yes. I mean, if I was a manager in that situation, I would have gone to the table, offered them the item again to start, or something else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's how that works. You know, it's not just take it off. What if they were still hungry?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, there are so many other steps to go to, and there should always be a manager touch if there's something wrong like that.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I, you know, if we have a recook here at the comedy club,
mm-hmm.
and nobody expects the food to be decent at a comedy club.
Right. Although
even
I know
with,
it is.
Even with that expectation, if we have a recook, I do it myself,
mm-hmm.
and
can
I generally deliver it
uh-huh.
myself and apologize and say...
That is the lovely part about the little places, is that, you know, and even at... Local Habit,
mm-hmm.
my lovely chef there. he was terrible. He would still do the same thing, though. He would recook it himself and then bring it out to the table.
I love that you said he's terrible.
He's awful.
Yeah, and fortunately, he's never going to listen to this fucking podcast, so ever going to come back to you.
Care less. He's the reason I quit before they closed.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she jumped.
I jumped ship like 3 days
Gabby
before
was a rat,
they shuttered.
Rat from a burning ship.
Oh. As he was saying earlier, Titanic. I was dropped off, helicopter, band is already playing.
Yeah. You know, and I didn't think there was really anything wrong with the first derivation of that restaurant.
Mm-mm.
I don't know why they got it in their heads that it had to be Creole.
So specific. Yeah.
Did they think there was a market niche?
I
mean, there's only a couple Creole restaurants in town.
Yeah. Yeah, there's one down here, and then there's one in Old Town for some reason.
There's a Creole restaurant in Old Town?
Yeah, I go there for Cajun food all the time. No, yeah, there is one.
Hmm.
It's
I didn't know that.
Like right in the cemetery part.
great place for a restaurant.
It is.
Well, another thing that one of the things that I really have always loved about you is that you have a lot of guy's sensibilities to you.
Oh yeah.
And what I'm saying, and I don't mean that in a bad way, but you are a huge fan of movie dialogue,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of a guy thing. Quoting movie lines is definitely a guy thing.
Yeah, for some reason, there's something ingrained in you guys that, like, you watch it once and you know the entire script. I'm not there.
Right.
But I can keep up with the boys.
But you're also a very big music fan.
Oh, yes.
And just got back from Stagecoach. How was it?
Oh, so good. Oh, so good. I mean, I saw Snoop Dogg.
You saw Snoop Dogg?
Snoop Dogg came out.
At Coachella?
Yeah. No, at Stagecoach.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
He was too high to leave Coachella, so he just stayed for Stagecoach, right? That's what our friend Kyle said.
Did he perform?
Yeah. Yeah.
At Stagecoach.
Sam Hunt brought on G-Eazy and then Snoop. And then Dustin Lynch.
What the hell was Sam Hunt doing at Stagecoach?
He's a country singer.
Okay.
He's definitely a crossover, but he's a country singer. And then Dustin Lynch brought on Lit. Yeah.
Lit?
Yeah.
Like My Own Worst Enemy.
That's exactly
Lit.
What they sang. Yeah. It was a good time.
Wow.
And then Luke Bryant just sat there and just drank tequila and a whole bunch of Miller Lights. And I was like, he's now my favorite. He's got my beer down.
Was he... As he performed, or was
yeah,
he just
oh, yeah,
was he just hanging out?
No, he like it was funny because they were just
were you standing there waving and go, holy shit, you're Lou Bryan.
Yeah, yeah. Well, like, and he kept tossing the beers out. It was to the crowd, and it was so fun because he brought on Little Big Town back onto the stage, and they're a really great harmony country band. And he's like,
I consider them the Fleetwood Mac. Of country music.
Okay. Yes, they are absolutely that. So he brings them on, and then he's like, with these guys, I can sing anything. So Philip, who is the older gentleman in Little Big Town, has this bright red, I don't know if it was leather, but it looked like the Michael Jackson.
The Thriller jacket?
It didn't have all the like bells and whistles.
Right.
But it was that color, and it kind of was reminiscent of that. And Luke Bryan just starts singing about Philip's red jacket. And then Philip takes a big shot out of the bottle of Patron, which I think that's what it was, and spills it all over himself. And he's like, Philip's gonna puke. Philip's gonna, like, and they just all start harmonizing. Like, and it's just, that's so fun about those kinds of shows. Because
right.
I may have had a few adult beverages.
No.
I know.
You've been here 20 minutes and you're already down the shot.
And part of my beer.
But
I love festivals, though.
I'm having trouble with a lot of the, like, current country music.
But they're too poppy.
Yeah, and it's very bro-y anymore. And I made the observation the other day. I call it hay metal.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
I absolutely get that.
It's got that feel.
Mm-hmm.
The one of the wonderful things about hair metal before it imploded on itself like a bad souffle was it was about partying and girls. Mm-hmm. And, you know, trade in your Harley, stripper on the back of your Harley for a stripper in your pickup truck.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much a lot of today's country music.
Yeah.
I grew up when at the tail end of old country, but even like the newer country that I grew up listening to.
Are you talking like Alan Jackson
and
stuff like that?
Those guys still, you could still feel them being in touch with the really older country.
Yeah, they did follow Hank Williams and Johnny Cash and the rest of those. And they took that. There are still some artists these days. Like, there are a little fewer and far between, you know. Like Sam Hunt, as you were just saying, like that is a crossover. It's just like Taylor Swift. She started out country, but
she
then
was never country.
Oh, she did. She was.
No, she couldn't get signed. My theory is that she couldn't get signed as a straight up pop artist. So she had some country tinged songs. But even back then, you could see where she was going. She got her foot in the door. And then just basically ripped the door off the hinges.
Mm-hmm.
And she's attractive. She writes her own music, which I have always respected, even if I
don't like what
can't.
She's talking about, which
boyfriend
I don't
know.
She broke up with.
I probably don't know more than two Taylor Swift songs.
They're the same.
Oh, so you know all of them. But I don't think she was ever... I mean, she was even more poppy than Shania Twain was, who was one of the first people to get that
really crossover.
That crossover thing.
Yeah. I mean, like, there's so many of them that could crossover because they really aren't. They're not using, like, the steel guitars, you know, like, that you hear. Although, Chris Stapleton did some great, bluegrass, southern rock.
Right.
It was amazing. Like, I honestly have goosebumps right now. Which band did it? One of the bands did a Black Crowes song. And one of the girls I was with didn't know who the Black Crowes were.
Oh, my God.
I know.
What are you doing hanging out with Philistines?
They're just young.
They're just young.
They're just young. They don't know. So I teach them the ways. That's what I do. And she was like, I really like this song. I was like, the next time I see you, I'm going to bring in the CD.
You ought to hear the original version.
Yeah, I might have this on tape or vinyl. Crap.
You can get a hold of a reel-to-reel, right? But, no, it's just I listen to it, and it's country-tinged
pop music.
With certain aspects of rock and roll to it. And I don't necessarily know that that's great for country music. Full disclosure, my favorite country artist of all time is George Strait. And that is about as old school as you can get.
Yeah.
You know, back, what are you laughing at?
It's as old school as wife beating.
Are you talking
about his music goes back to old Texas swing.
Yeah. That's the kind of stuff I grew up on. My dad's from Oklahoma.
Right.
My mom's from Colorado.
Bob Willis, Merle Haggard.
Hank Jr. Honestly, Kingston Trio. Like, so it was all the folky kind of stuff, too.
Wow. Trio? Oh,
I love me some Kingston Trio.
Well, after we'll do a three-part for Hang Down Your Head, John Dooley, later on.
Hang Down Your Head and Cry? Yeah.
Have you seen Hank Williams III?
I have not.
He's my favorite.
Oh, yeah?
I love Hank Williams III.
He did, there's an absolutely mediocre show on Netflix now with Ashton Kutcher and Danny Masterson.
And Sam
Elliott.
Yeah.
Sam Elliott and Deborah Winger are absolutely the best things on that show, because otherwise it's Hyde and Kelso in cowboy boots.
Well, that's what they were going for.
Right. But Hank Jr., or Hank the Third, and I think it's Merle Haggard's son.
No, or Shooter Jennings.
Might have been Shooter Jennings.
Yeah,
the theme song for that, and it's really, really good. They did a remake of Mamas Don't Let Your Babies Go Up to Be Cowboys.
Oh.
And it's a really good version of that song. And the music in that show is really, really good.
That's the one that pops up like right away when I turn on Netflix, and I'm just like, skip. So maybe
you can binge watch it. It's an easy watch.
Yeah.
And those two have just such a natural chemistry that it's very much that 70s show in cowboy boots. But Sam Elliott is spectacular.
I love him.
He's great in everything.
Ashton Kutcher walks in wearing Uggs, and Sam Elliott's first words to him were, "What the fuck is on your feet?" And that, I was like, okay, I'm hooked. I got to watch this tonight. So,
I love him.
But I don't know that I haven't listened to country for a while, and the stuff that I hear, like I said, it's hay metal.
Yeah, I absolutely understand where you're coming. Like, 'cause my radio station, like if you got into my car right now, you'd have on the first presets, there's three alternative music stations, one that plays mainly 80s music, which I just recently found, which I love.
What's the name of that one? I think Annette has that in her car.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, they play a bunch of weird.
Yeah.
They played a Donny Iris song the other day.
Really?
And I was thinking me and nine other people who lived in Pittsburgh know who Donny Iris is, and nobody else does.
No. But then we only have one country station, which is actually weird because Southern California has a really great following for country music.
There are a lot of rednecks here.
Yeah. There, it's true.
Well, I mean, there's the rodeo days that happen out in Lakeside, they sell out the amphitheater whenever any country
every
act
time.
Comes in. Yeah.
But, like, so we only have the one station to listen to, and they only do old school country on Sunday nights. Like, so otherwise, you get to hear that new Luke Bryan song every hour on the hour. So it's just like a pop station.
Right.
That's something that we have so many years of music. If we're only going to have one station, like, I really feel like we could broaden that a little bit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, definitely.
What the radio's going to be like in 5 years.
But I think there are some very, very talented people working in the industry now.
Yeah.
I think Zach Brown is one of the most supremely talented musicians I have ever seen or heard.
And he's one of those that likes to play with other people. Like when he did the song with Chris Cornell, you've heard it. It's so great.
What is it, Black Dog?
I think
or something like that.
I would have to look it up. Yeah. But it's a really great song, and that's one of those that I actually haven't heard it on the country station. I've heard it on, like, 91X or 153.
He was on the series with the Foo Fighters, the HBO series. They did an episode in Nashville.
I did not see that.
Oh, my God. And he was on the track that they played in Nashville. Sonic Highways.
Oh.
If you haven't seen Sonic Highways,
okay.
It's spectacular because they go to a new city and they talk about the musical history
of that city
and the influences. Awesome. And they did one out in the desert where a lot of bands record in this weird little recording studio out in the desert.
Uh-huh.
And Joe Walsh showed up to do a guitar solo there. The Zac Brown episode was in the studio that Zac Brown owns. Mm-hmm. And it's an old... Oh, the song Congregation was written because the studio is in an old church. And
the acoustics there must be.
And he plays, and Zac Brown plays on the track, which furthers that he can play with anybody.
Mm-hmm.
They talk about old influences in D.C., and they go to Chicago, and Rick Nielsen ends up showing up from Cheap Trick. So have to see the series. And it was brilliant because each week, before they even released the album, you got to hear a new Foo Fighters song each week. So they had five or six songs that people were requesting before the album was even out.
That's fantastic.
And the pre-sales must have just been huge.
Yeah. You know, and I, like, with a band like Foo Fighters, like, and looking at Dave Grohl, like, he doesn't seem like the type of person that's doing that for the money. He just really enjoys music.
He's having a better time than anybody on the planet.
Sound City, that's the movie that they did, right? Like, when he talks about the recording studio, and he was gifted the soundboard, right?
Mm-hmm.
He was humbled.
Yeah.
You know, and that's so great, and you don't see that a lot anymore.
Right.
One of the other shows similar to that is Hall & Oates, but Daryl.
Live from Daryl's House?
Oh, God. Because you know that's my absolute favorite band.
Yep.
Is Hall & Oates, yes.
I've met Mr. and Mrs. Hall several times.
Yes?
Yes, they were patients of mine on the ambulance.
Oh, what would you doing to them?
Mrs. Hall at the time's health was failing, and she was having a lot of respiratory issues, so we would see them quite often.
I always thought when I was younger that I was going to be Mrs. Hall.
Oh.
I did.
There's still a chance.
You probably have a better shot at being Mrs. Oates.
That's also true.
No offense.
With or without the mustache, whichever one.
Oh, I like to be
tickled. He looks weird without the mustache.
He does look odd without the mustache. I think he's also had some odd work done. Looks a little plasticky to me.
But Daryl Hall is another one. I've watched that show where he was on with Todd Rundgren.
Mm-hmm.
He was on with Darius Rucker.
He's got the younger artists. Yeah. He's got the younger artists, and then he barbecues with them. I'm just like, this is the most amazing thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Food and great music. Who could ask for more?
But we have often said at our house, the running joke is that in all of humanity, Dave Grohl was having a better time than anybody.
Yeah.
Because if you just look at the stuff that you go to the Kennedy Center Honors and they pan through the crowd and Dave Grohl's sitting there for no apparently good reason. But he's there. And the thing I love about him is that he's an incredible fan as well as being a musician.
Mm-hmm.
They did a tribute to Queen a couple years back, and he played drums and just looked like he was having the time of his life.
Yeah.
Because he was up there doing that.
Yeah. I mean, even when they Rickrolled the Westboro Baptist Church, first of all, I about peed my pants. But he was just like, I'm doing this. I'm going out this. I'm owning this. It's right before my concert. I probably should be a warm up. Nah, let's go do this.
Yeah. I love when people are just really passionate about it. And I think music That's another thing that's getting really, really corporate.
Mm-hmm.
I think
what do you mean
a lot
getting
of,
really corporate. Well, it's been really corporate for a long time.
But
if anything, I think it's because of the internet and the power's been taken away from a lot of the corporate record labels,
yeah.
and it's gone back to the artists because the artist can release it on SoundCloud, and you can have more subscribers. You can have more followers on Twitter than album sales in this day and age.
Yeah. Who? Like, when's the last time you bought an album?
The whole album as a physical copy.
Uh-huh.
It's been a while.
Yeah.
If it had to have been a greatest hits package. That,
yeah, exactly.
A greatest hits album that I didn't. I probably own several of the songs already, but I don't know that I've purchased. And I remember as a kid having to buy an album. Mm-hmm. You know what they are?
Yes,
they're
back
in fashion.
I know what a 45 is. I know what a 78 is.
But buying an entire album simply to have one song.
Yeah.
And now you can buy just one song.
But then you listen to the entire album over and over and over. In fact, when you would hear that one song on the radio, as soon as that song was over, you were already singing the next song on the album.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it wasn't that, you're like, wait. my boyfriend today actually found a Walkman in my car. He's like, why do you have this? I was like, I don't know.
In your car.
Yeah,
in the closet, but it's in the car.
I have the cup holder, but there's like a little cubby underneath. And I don't know if this is, I don't know. I've had this car for a long time, longer than Walkmans were out still. Like, I don't know why there's a Walkman in my car, but I just wanted to say that.
Did he open it and see your secret shame that you have a Nelson cassette tape in it?
It was probably Debbie Gibson. Let's get real.
Shake your love. I just can't shake your love.
Oh, yeah, he'll enjoy that.
But I was very pleased. The young man sitting to my right, I got into his car yesterday, and I told him this last night. I drove his car down here. He borrowed my truck. And on comes Green Grass and High Tides Forever.
Absolutely.
And the Outlaws was the very first concert I ever went to.
Oh, very nice.
Thank you. My dad raised me right.
And then it segued into Ghost Riders in the Sky, which was great. And then the third song was an Against Me song, which I was telling him, I saw them right after the lead singer switched from boy to girl.
He's a shim.
Put out a great album, man. That Transsexual Blues, that's a fucking great album. I love that album. All right, make you question some things.
We are running up against the hour mark here, and I realize that we haven't talked a whole lot of food and beverage, but hang on, there is somebody standing outside the door.
I got it.
Just tell her to go to the box office, will you, Maddie? She's dropping off something for probably property management. But, okay. Now she's interrupted the show and she's walking away. Spectacular.
Thank you.
So, what's next? What's in the future for Gab? Are you going back to school?
Well, that is the end-all plan.
Yeah, I remember that. Uh-huh. I remember having this discussion with you 8 months ago in the hospitality industry about how you're going back to school.
I'm going back to school. I'm going to get my teaching certificate, and I keep getting roped back into restaurants.
You can't get out.
I just love it. I love people. You know me. Like, I feed off of this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that's why after managing restaurants and the rest, like, that's why, like, I feel like I am a good teacher, you know, and I think that middle schoolers are right up my alley. It's just like having a staff of 20-year-olds, right?
Your guess is as good as mine.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Yeah. I don't know. I think you probably have a... You'd probably have to get used to a higher maturity level with the eighth graders.
Yeah, probably.
given the nature of the staff that we have here. I was talking to one of our servers last night, and I found out that she is an RN.
What?
And I looked at our owner, and I was like, how did we have a successful person get onto the aisle of misfit toys here? And the bartender goes, hey, I used to be a paramedic. I was successful. We were like, yeah, the key to that is were.
Were, yeah, were.
Past tense. Yeah. Maddie was a paramedic.
EMT.
EMT?
Slight difference.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. I used to be an editor, the online editor for Phoenixville newspapers. I actually used to have a career, like a real bona fide career. Then I fucked it all up.
Yeah, you didn't fuck it up. You're pursuing your dream.
Absolutely.
Now, see, the artist in me commends you for that.
Absolutely.
The father in me agrees with you. You fucked it all
yeah.
up.
Oh, no. My dad is so supportive of comedy. He shares everything. It's to the point of embarrassment.
Really?
He shares everything I post on Facebook.
No kidding.
Everything. He's unbelievably ecstatic.
That or that's the only button he knows? Share.
It is.
Share.
Don't hope he never finds the poke button for right. your sake.
Oh, God. I'm in the craziest poke war.
My mother knows that I do comedy. She's never heard any of my comedy.
Oh, no?
No. I use bad language. I use bad language that my mother wouldn't appreciate. The F word specifically.
Uh-huh. I understand that.
And since I don't know why I just said the F word, since I've said fuck about 14 times already in this podcast.
We're trying to
in respect to her.
Yes.
Yeah, out of respect for her, yes. In case my mother suddenly learns how to log on to the internet and catches the last 2 minutes of this podcast, the F word was for you, Mommy.
I mean, I've seen your stand-up. I've seen it a few times, and I've sat next to your wife while this has happened, and there's times I'm like, he's saying this, and you're right here.
You know what? The key to
it's pretty clean.
It is pretty clean.
Yeah.
I have used my wife. I've referenced my wife a couple different times, and... But the key is, I always run it by her before I do it.
I would never,
because of that situation. I don't want to say something truly heinous and have her go.
Her be caught off guard,
and then everybody at the table is like, "Ooh, wow, this is that's kind of funny," but I'm not sure I want to laugh at that. So, I don't really get dirty. I tried it. For a little while, because of the show that I was on, it seemed to skew that direction. It's not me. It's not me. I can be bawdy, but I'm not really dirty.
No.
No.
Never you just have, you, and you have to learn that. It's something you have to go through.
People have natural. Yeah, you're naturally a clean. You know, your sense of humor just naturally goes in that direction.
Right.
And you don't naturally. And then there are people. I can think of who naturally go into more of a dirty, filthy realm.
And, you know, for me, if you're going to do that, it's got to be authentic.
Yes.
I felt like, and I don't know how it translated to the audience, but I felt like I was being insincere by going that route when I'm not really geared that way.
And your material doesn't even necessarily lend itself that...
No.
That any type of off-color language would necessarily even spice things up.
Right.
Because you're not an angry guy, so the fucks and everything wouldn't be the proper staccato.
Yeah, and right. I use profanity on stage because I use profanity in real life.
Yes.
Right.
I am...
Yes, you do.
I know how to not be profane, but profanity is a lot more expedient most of the time.
Yeah. So. They encompass all the words that we want to put in there.
Yeah,
fuck.
You know, it's the difference between, hey, would you mind putting that on the table, versus set it the fuck down.
Yes, I get that message.
All right. How can we find you?
At WW. Just kidding. All around town. No, still Melting Pot at nighttime, and I'll be at Waypoint for brunches on Saturdays and Sundays.
Saturdays and Sundays?
Yes. Yes. I'm excited to get back into that game.
Do you have any social media that you want to promote?
just have my Facebook.
Just my
Facebook.
What do you got coming up?
Let's see. I was actually just looking at the phone right now. So I have on May 26th, I'll be performing at the Bar La Mesa show.
That's a relatively new room, right?
It is a relatively new room. That's run by DLL and Damian Leakes, our guys booking that. They're doing a really good job. Closest thing that we really have in San Diego to a black room.
Oh.
It definitely can get that kind of, like, rowdy, and they definitely enjoy jokes, you know, and they enjoy energy. Mm-hmm. I've seen guys who don't necessarily do great in the club setting who know how to use the bar energy,
mm-hmm.
be able to turn it on and smash.
Nice.
So I'm really looking forward to
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and that's interesting that there are shows of a more urban nature. P-Man does one,
mm-hmm.
That I've performed on several times, but there isn't really a black room per se in clubs, but it's good. It's good for the scene to have a room.
Absolutely. And then also I have coming up here at the Madhouse, I will be on Comedy Throwdown on June 2nd.
Nice.
Yes. So nice. Really looking forward to that. And then, hold on, one last one. June 3rd, I will be performing here on the Weekend Showcase.
Very nice.
Yes.
Very nice.
Got some good shows coming.
Yeah. I'm here on the weekend of, I think, the 24th and 25th of June.
Nice.
Paul Ogata's here that weekend, and I love performing with Paul Ogata.
Yeah.
And they always he always brings in a good show, and he brings in a good crowd. He's one of those kind of guys that have you ever seen Paul Ogata, Gab?
I don't think so.
He's probably got – we estimated the amount of material at a conservative, 9 hours?
Absolutely.
Probably.
Holy moly.
Yeah. Paul's been doing it a long time, uh-huh. and he's just really, really a great comedian.
Great comedian. Super polished. Very
yeah,
nice.
Yeah.
That's nice. See, like, I love watching the new guys, but when, like, you get that one that you're just like, all right, this guy knows what he's
well,
doing.
Well, Paul's not really, he's an interesting guy in that he's not really a household name as far as, like, TV appearances. He has credits, for sure. But a lot of people, if you saw him, you wouldn't go, hey, that's Paul Ogata. But he has got a huge international following. He's huge in Asia. So he's one of those guys that's he's kind of like, you know, Hasselhoff in Germany.
Right.
You know, you see him and you go, hey, he's somebody in the United States. He's somebody.
Uh-huh.
But you go over there and
he's a superstar.
Yeah, he's a superstar. So
that's fantastic.
Shout out to Paul Ogata,
who
also will never listen to this fucking podcast.
Should have him on sometime.
And I don't know that I have anything else on the calendar. I'm on a show here next Tuesday. But this will be out after that, so that's just not really talking. Oh, I'm on Reds next Wednesday. Again, the show will come out after that. And that's a great room. Reds
it's
is
the
always
best show in San Diego.
Yeah, Reds is always fun down in PB.
Affectionately known as the Wood.
Never been? Wait, what?
The Wood.
At the Wood?
Ah, okay. I know that.
Nobody knows it as the Reds.
You know.
Why is it Reds Comedy Show then?
I don't know.
I'll have to ask Josh next time.
Because it used to be called Beechwood, right?
I believe so, but okay. I don't know a lot. But yeah.
Yeah, it is the Wood.
Ahsan Ahmad just did it yesterday.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, did. Fucking amazing. He's great. So.
Love that.
And let's see, culinarily coming up, just found out we are going to be doing something during Bacon Week. We are going to do a bacon dinner here with a show afterwards. And we have the Five Chef Society, which is going to take place in October.
Did that sell out already?
No, it hasn't. It's because it's so far out.
Right.
And we're selling more tickets than we did at Small Bar.
Okay.
It's a bigger place, but I'm really excited about that. We have a great lineup of chefs and a incredible lineup of comedians mm-hmm. that night.
Oh, yeah. That's
See, this is why I'm excited to get back into the independent. That way I can do what I used to do and feed you guys booze while you're cooking.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. And then I've talked to your future employer. Mm-hmm. Rich and I we're probably going to end up doing something at Waypoint.
Yay.
Maybe get the rest of the band back together and get all the fat guys in the same room.
Yeah.
Which is, it's really something to see.
Uh-huh.
It's like the Dance of the Hippos from Fantasia when we're all in the kitchen together.
You guys have all those tutus on?
I'm going to make them some. They make elastic that big, so.
And as always, since we haven't recorded our new bumper yet, you can find the podcast at Shot in a Beer Pod on Twitter. Hey, I did that without even
hesitation.
Stumbling. It's finally after, 14 episodes, I finally have our fucking
Locked
Twitter
in.
Address down. And if you go to Facebook and you search for us just up in the top bar, search for Shot in a Beer, it'll take you straight to the Shot in a Beer page. The Facebook address is technically Drinks with Chefs, but nobody uses that anyway. So, guys, one more of the Caskmates.
Of course.
Gabby, it was great having you here. Great talking music
Thanks
with you.
Thanks for having me.
And Shot in a Beer is out of here.
Last night I dreamt of flying over hillsides in the snow. And I drove down through the clouds to the valley there below. When the fields turned into parking lots, my freedom turned to dread. The ground rose up to greet me, and I jumped up out of bed. You can fly, fly, fly off to any way you choose. You can try, 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 but eventually you'll lose. It seems there's always something trying to bring a good man down. I've no fear of falling, but I hate it in the ground. I'm searching through my soul for trying to find some extra change. I thought that I knew everything till everything changed. Now I'm standing on an island that is singing into the sea. And all that I can do is just enjoy the scenery. Well, you can fly, fly, fly off to any way you choose. You can try, 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 but eventually you're doomed. They say I'm mad. Just before he drowns, I have no fear of falling, but I hate it in the ground. I have no fear of falling, but I hate it in the ground. Yeah.
You've been listening to Shot in a Beer. For information about the podcast, just search for Shot in a Beer on Facebook or find us on Twitter at Shot in a Beer Pod. Shot in a Beer is also a member of a Modern Professions family of podcasts. For other podcasts you might enjoy and information about live shows and how you can get involved, visit amodernprofession.com or check the network out on Twitter at amodernpro. Thank you for your continued support of Shot in a Beer.